A Designer Religion. This message by guest preacher Reverend Bowden McElroy was delivered at Trinity Baptist Church on Sunday morning, May the 27th, 2007, and was taken from Judges chapter 17 and 18.
Well, as I said earlier, my name is Bowden McElroy. Nice to be back. I think this is my third time here. I'm pretty sure it's the third time I've come here and it's been raining. I don't know quite what that's all about. Pastor Rod invited me to come and speak. Ordinarily, what I'm not doing this, I make my living as a marriage and family counselor. And that allows me to serve as an interim pastor. And when I'm not serving as an interim, I love to come in and do pulpit supply when my friends are on vacation. So I appreciate the opportunity to be here this morning. As a counselor, one of the things that I'm fascinated with, one of the things that I'm interested in very, very much, is this notion of excuses and rationalizations and the things we sort of delude ourselves with to explain our sinful and unjust behavior. And there's examples of it all around us. My favorite example is from the very first book of the Bible, Adam and Eve eat the apple they're not supposed to eat. God asked Eve, why not? And she says, why did you do that? She says, well, the serpent made me do it. And then he asked Adam, why did you eat? And Adam comes up with the best excuse in the whole history of excuses. Adam said, the woman whom you gave me. In one sentence, he manages to justify his behavior and blame both his wife and God. That is an excuse of all excuses. I see it around me all the time. I see stuff in the newspaper. I hear things from my clients, occasionally from my children. I'm always sort of interested. Someone gets caught for speeding, and it's all the cop's fault. If that cop hadn't been there. I talk to some guy who's just angry with it that his wife wants to leave. She kicked him out. I can't believe she would do this. You're a Christian counselor. You convince her to stay. And I'm thinking to myself, I know better than to say it, but I'm thinking to myself, but I don't even like being in the same room with you. And I only have to be here 30 minutes. I understand why she left. You're a jerk. There was the young man who complained about a headache. He was seeing me because he had alcohol and drug problems. He was buying drugs off the street, taking them a handful at a time, and he had a headache. I said, why don't you take some aspirin? He said, I don't like putting things in my body. Let me get this straight. You're only opposed to FDA-approved drugs. Other stuff you really don't mind taking. But there was the guy who was just complained he was worn out. He was frazzled. He needed help with time management. Do you think maybe the fact that you got caught cheating not on your wife but on your mistress had something to do with that? You had a wife, a girlfriend, and another girlfriend? And you're worried about time management? We come up with all kinds of excuses. If you will open your Bible to Judges, chapter 17, we're going to look at a story that you may not have heard. It's kind of an obscure story. It's not one that I hear preached on very much. And it's found in chapter 17 and 18. We're going to kind of go through this quickly this morning. I have about 3 points to make. A lot of sermons that I like to preach, and I think of myself as a teacher more than a preacher, I try to be uplifting, positive, point out God's blessings, but there's a lot in the Bible that is not quite that uplifting. It serves as a warning, and this particular story is one of those. But I think it's there for a reason, and it's what God's had on my mind, so I want to share it with you this morning. There are 3 key players in this story. The first is a man named Micah. Chapter 17, verse 1. Now a man named Micah from the hill country in Ephraim. That's the first key player. The second key player is a young priest. Pay attention to the young priest because at the end of the story, at the end of chapter 18, we discover the identity, and it's one of those potboilers with a twist, kind of like the ending of Lost, which I'm still trying to figure out. It's a twist in there. We can kind of pay attention to what this priest does. And the other key player is the tribe of Dan. It's a collection of people. It's a community of people. Let's start in Judges 17 and look at the first 4 verses. Now a man named Micah from the hill country of Ephraim said to his mother, the 11 hundreds of shekels of silver that were taken from you, and about which I heard you utter a curse, I have that silver with me. I took it. And his mother said, the Lord bless you, my son. And then when he returned the 1,100 shekels of silver to his mother, she said, I solemnly consecrate my silver to the Lord for my son, to make a carved image and a cast idol. I will give it back to you. So he returned the silver to his mother, and she took 200 shekels of silver and gave them to a silversmith, who made them into the image and the idol, and they were put in Micah's house. Here's the story. This is a couple of generations after Moses. Long enough that it's beginning to fade in memory, not quite so long that maybe there's a few people there who remember Moses. Certainly, their parents did. And Micah is living in this land, and he decides he better give the money he stole from his mother back. Now, they may have remembered Moses. They may have remembered all that God done in bringing him the people of Israel out of Egypt, but he certainly didn't remember the Ten Commandments. I mean, right off the bat, we know this guy's broken two of them. He stole, and he stole from his mother. He stole, and he didn't honor his mother and father. He's broken two commandments right off the bat. And I would like to think that he started feeling guilty about it, and shameful, and remorseful, and repentant, and God convicted him, and he gave the money back. But that's not what it says. He says, the silver that was taken from you and about which I heard you utter a curse. This is the kid who got caught with crumbs on his face after raiding the cookie jar. And mom's made that statement, whoever broke this cookie jar is going to get it. He got caught. And he wanted to avoid the curse. And that was his sole motivation for giving back the money. We know right off the bat, Micah is not a man who pays close attention to God's laws and commandments. But we also know a few things about mom. Maybe it really is true that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. What we know about mom is that when he gives the money back, she says, the Lord bless you, my son. Pious, heartfelt, right? The Lord bless you. I'm always kind of interested when I work with these kids that are in trouble. These parents come up and they say to me, he's a good boy. He's a good boy. He tortured small animals, burned your house down, and molested his cousin. Which part of that is a good? That's what this mom is doing. He's a good boy. You stole money from me. That's okay. You're a good boy. Mom isn't necessarily living in the real world. She's not looking at exactly everything that's going on around her. He returned the 1,100 shekels of silver to his mother, and she said, I solemnly consecrate my silver to the Lord. What a nice thing to do. God gave me money. It's really his. I'm just a steward of it. I'm going to give this back to him. Sounds good, right? But look at the next statement that she makes. I consecrate this to the Lord to make a carved image, and a cast idol. No wonder Micah didn't understand all of the Ten Commandments. Mom wasn't following them. Parents, we can't expect our children to rise above us on the moral plane. We have to set the example for them. Mom isn't following God's commandments. She's making an idol. The second commandment? First and second, no other gods before me? No graven images? She's going to make an idol. On top of that, look at what mom does. I'm going to consecrate all of this silver. So she took 200 shekels to the silversmith. She's lying to herself. She's lying to her kid. She took about 18% of what she had consecrated to the Lord and did something that the Lord had warned her not to do anyway, when he gave the commandment about no images, no idols. Verse 5 says, now this man, Micah, had a shrine. And he made an ephod and some idols and installed one of his sons as his priest. And in those days, Israel had no king. Everyone did as he saw fit. The first point I want you to see this morning is that Micah began to do things out of convenience. He wanted the appearance of religious. He wanted the appearance of obeying God, but he wanted it on his terms at his convenience. The proper way to worship at that point in time was go to a place that God had appointed, with a priest whom God had appointed, someone from the lineage of Levi, someone from the tribe of Levi, whom God had appointed and anointed to be a priest. And part of the ephod was part of that religious accoutrements that they had. It's part of what they did. Micah decided, I don't want to do that. I want to worship here at home. I don't have to leave and go anywhere. It's more convenient for me to stay. And I can just imagine Micah beginning rationalizing and excusing why he did what he did. I hear those excuses all the time. Well, I don't really need to go to church to worship God. I can do that at home. Well, perhaps if we're talking about a home church, you can. But if we're talking about just sleeping in late on Sunday, grabbing the Sunday newspaper and a couple of donuts, I'm not sure that really qualifies as worship. But we hear those kinds of excuses all the time. When we start looking at a matter of convenience and placing convenience over God's Word and God's law and God's commandment, we are going to get in trouble. Micah had a shrine. He made an ephod. He made some idols. And he installed one of his sons as his priest. In those days, Israel had no king. Everyone did as he saw fit. When you do find someone who teaches on Judges, they may point out to you that phrase, in those days in Israel there was no king. And you may find them teaching something that I think just quite misses the boat, misses the mark. Because they will say to you, the reason that Israel had no, the reason that they did all these horrible things was because of the lack of leadership. What we need is strong leadership. That's not what Judges is trying to teach, I don't think. Flip a few pages down, get to 1 and 2 Kings, and you'll discover that even when Israel had a king, they did right in the eyes of the Lord when the king did right. And when the king did wrong, the nation of Israel did wrong in the eyes of the Lord. I believe what Judges is telling us here is, wait a second, guys. You did this all on your own. You can't blame anyone for this. Human nature is a sinful nature. And the sin nature is to make excuses and delude ourselves and begin to place convenience over God's law. I think he's pointing that out. There was no king in Israel. You guys can't blame this on someone else. You did it all by your little lonesome self. And he says, everyone did as he saw fit. One of the things that we're finding in today's culture is that people are interested more and more in what the sociologists are calling designer religions. A little bit of this, a little bit of that. We'll kind of pick and choose what it is we want to believe in. I think it is just as Micah did. I don't think it's a new phenomenon. I don't think it's something peculiar to the youngest generation we have. I think that it's an old happening that's been going on for thousands of years, where we get caught up in matters of convenience and we kind of pick and choose what we want. Micah picked a little bit from the traditional religious values of his day. He had a priest, and the priest had an ephod. That's what we're supposed to do, isn't it? I mean, that's kind of like what we're supposed to do. He picked a little bit from over here. And then he took this cast idol that his mother made and he put that up. And then it says there were other idols, presumably idols that came from in the community and in the land around him. Just kind of picking and choosing a little bit here and a little bit there. One of the things I do is I teach a psychology course at TCC. And I really try to get to know my students and talk to them both before and after class. Doesn't take long before they figure out what my worldview is and what my philosophy is. And we end up talking about religion and God and things that aren't necessarily part of the curriculum. We talk about that before class or after class. And I'm always kind of amazed at how these young men and women sort of pick and choose, because it seems right in their own eyes. It's kind of an idea of what's right for me is right for me. Who are you to tell me what's wrong and what's right? It's that issue of moral relativism that says that I'm okay. Whatever I want to believe, I'm okay with. Whatever you want to believe, You ought to be okay with that. And so when I come back and I try to talk to them about maybe, just maybe, there are moral absolutes in this world. There are standards by which we all need to live up to. They kind of laugh at me. You're the old guy in the suit. What do you know? And I think that's what Micah was doing. He was picking and choosing. A little bit of this, a little bit of that, because it was a matter of convenience. Well, once you decide that convenience is more important than obedience, the next thing you do is you begin to create. You create your own religious system. Micah had a shrine, an ephod, and he installed one of his sons as his priest. Verse 7 says, a young Levite from Bethlehem in Judah, who had been living within the clan of Judah, left that town in search of some other place to stay. And on the way, he came to Micah's house in the hill country of Ephraim. And Micah asked him, where are you from? I'm a Levite from Bethlehem in Judah, and I'm looking for a place to stay. Something clicked in Micah's brain. If you're going to go about creating your own religion, your own religious system, your own definition of spirituality, it sort of helps to mimic what's already out there so that you're not seen as too far out. Micah thinks to himself, a Levite. I've appointed my son as a priest, but he's just my son. We're not Levites. Here's a Levite from Bethlehem. This will give me some legitimacy. This will make it look like a real religion. This will make it look like, on the surface, that I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. Of course, the problem here is the Levite had no business wandering from town to town looking for his own job. That's not the way the system worked. The Levite was himself breaking God's commandments. And Micah came to him and he found him and he thought, aha, this will look good, this will work. So Micah said to him, live with me and be my father and priest, and I will give you 10 shekels of silver a year, your clothes and your food. So the Levite agreed to live with him, and the young man was to him like one of his sons. And Micah installed the Levites. Who's supposed to install the priesthood? The descendants of Aaron? That God had ordained a system for doing that? But once you're creating your own religious system, you don't worry about stuff like that. Micah installed the Levite, and the young man became his priest and lived in the house. Verse 13 says, Micah said, now I know the Lord will be good to me since this Levite has become my priest. Micah is on a search to create his own convenient religious system, all the while understanding that God looks down. He's wanting God's blessing, but he's not wanting to do what it takes to get that blessing. He's taken a shortcut or two. And he begins to think to himself, now I know God will bless me. How do you know that? Micah, come on. Get with the program. That's not how God works. And we find ourselves doing the same thing as a culture. Hopefully not this congregation, but we find ourselves as a people oftentimes doing the same thing. We begin to kind of make excuses, look at matters of convenience, create our own traditions, understanding that God's looking down, and we say to ourselves, surely God will bless this. God doesn't have to. God's going to bless what He chooses to bless when He chooses to bless it. One of the interesting things about this story is the circular nature of the reaction of events. Or to put it in other words, what goes around comes around. The Danites, the other key people in our story in Judges, the Danites were one of the tribes that had been promised a certain section of land in the Promised Land. And they looked at the people who occupied that land and they said to themselves, this is too hard. There's too many of them. They're too big. And they put off conquering that part of the land they were supposed to conquer. All of the other tribes had done so, except the tribe of Dan. They were just kind of waiting. what's going to happen here? I don't know what they were waiting for, maybe for a plague to come along. Or finally, they gave up waiting, and they decided to take it on themselves. We will find God's blessing in another way. We'll go on the prowl. We'll hunt for a section of land where the people aren't so numerous and the warriors aren't so mighty. And so they went out to find that land. Giving up on what God had told them to do, they set about fulfilling God's plan in their own way. And in doing so, they ran across Micah. Chapter 18. Verse 14. The five men who had spied out the land of Laish said to their brothers, "Do you know that one of these houses has an ephod? Other household gods, a carved image, and a cast idol? Now you know what to do." So they turned in there and went to the house of the young Levite at Micah's place and greeted him. The 600 Danites, armed for battle, stood at the entrance to the gates. Some greeting. And the five men who had spied out the land went inside and took the carved image and the ephod and the other household gods and the cast idol, while the priest and the 600 armed men stood at the entrance to the gate. And when these men went into Micah's house and took the carved image, the ephod, and the other household gods, and the cast idol, the priest said to them, "What are you doing?" And they answered him, "Be quiet. Don't say a word. Come with us. Be our father and priest. Isn't it better to serve a tribe and a clan in Israel as a priest rather than just one man's household?" And the priest was glad. This is a warning to people like myself and Pastor Rod to say, don't go just because it's a bigger church in a county seat with a higher paycheck. You either go because God sends you or you stay put. This priest got a better gig. That's all it amounts to. I can go from being a household priest to the priest of a clan. I can go from 10 shekels a year and food and clothes, which wasn't much, to a better salary in a bigger place. It doesn't matter that these people are not following God's will. They're not setting out to conquer in faith the land that God gave them to conquer. I can live with that. I'm going to go with them because they're bigger, they're better, and the salary's better. And when they had gone some distance from Micah's house, verse 22, the men who lived near Micah were called together and overtook the Danites. And as they shouted after them, the Danites turned and said to Micah, "What's the matter with you that you called out your men to fight?" I love that statement. What goes around comes around. Micah created his own religious system as a matter of convenience. And then he encountered a people, 600 warriors strong, maybe 2,000, 3,000 people all together when you add in servants and wives and children, who were doing the same thing. As a matter of ease and convenience, they decided to fulfill God's plan in their own way, not bothering with God's plan himself. And what does he do? The same guy who had the idea that what's right in my own eyes is right, what's right for me is right, who are you to tell me I'm wrong, encounters somebody bigger and stronger who says the exact same thing, and he gets mad about it. He gets mad about it, gathers his people together and chases after him. And they look at him and say, "What are you doing? We're just doing, all we did was hire the guy away and steal some stuff from you. What's wrong with you?" I love that about the Danites. They are so caught up in their excuse making that they look at him whom they victimized and said, "What's wrong with you?" Sometimes we do that as well. People come back and they open God's Word and they say something that's a little hard to hear and it steps on more than a few toes and it's a little unpleasant, and we look at that preacher and go, "What's wrong with you? It's not what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to fill me full of warm fuzzies. Tell me God made me a winner. That's what you're supposed to do. Why are you stepping on my toes? Why are you doing that?" Micah created this system where it looked right in his own eyes, and he ran smack up against someone else who had a slightly different version that looked right in their own eyes. And you would think that the consistent thing to do would just be kind of shrug your shoulders and say, oh, well, neither one of them did that. Michael was upset about that. He got ensnared in his own philosophical trap, and he was angry about it. He wasn't loving and accepting. He didn't shrug his shoulders and say, well, it looked okay to them. They're following their own religious system. He got mad, and then he was unable to do anything. See, both Micah and the tribe of Dan began with a matter of convenience. For Micah, it was not having to worship someone else, having his own priest installed. For the tribe of Dan, the convenience was, we'll find an easier place to conquer. And then they created their own system. They began to go outside the bounds of what God had in store for them, installed their own priest, began to worship in a semblance of what God had commanded, but it was their own thing to do, and they got caught up in this circular reasoning. One event leads to another event, and we get entrapped in our own distorted philosophy. We get trapped in our own excuse-making. The lesson this morning, the points of this particular teaching, the moral I get from this story, is that we have to obey God in all things, regardless of how easy it is. Micah would have been far better off to worship God the way God intended. The Danites would have been far better off to have worshiped God the way God intended, to have gone and conquered their land according to God's plan, not their own. The lesson I learned from this is that when I begin to create my own traditions, I run the risk of avoiding what it is that God set out in His Word. And that's never a helpful thing. In the end, Micah lost it all. He lost his priest. He lost his idols. He lost the silver image that God, his mother had made for him. He lost it all. And the Danites, if you know your history, the Danites lost it all. Became one of the lost tribes. They just disappeared. They were either wiped out or scattered or both. They dropped out of God's story. They hadn't followed through with what God had planned for them. In our congregations today, in our churches, we pride ourselves on not being committed to meaningless tradition. We're not those high church liturgical types with the robes and the responsive stuff that doesn't necessarily mean anything. That's not us. We believe that you get saved as an adult, or at least as a young adult, having made that decision consciously, and that everything we need is straight out of the Bible, and it's not based on tradition at all. And yet, sometimes we're guilty of creating our own traditions. Maybe not as fanciful or deliberate as what Michael or the Danites did, but we create our own traditions, and we get so caught up in them sometimes that we don't recognize that they're even traditions. Let me give you a couple of quick examples. When you come here to go to Sunday school, you guys probably go to a age-graded Sunday school, right? Youth go to their thing, children go to theirs, young, median, senior adults. Only at my church, no one wants to move up to the senior adults, so the median adults is like from age 40 to 75. I got news for you. It's not in here. Age-graded Sunday school is a wonderful thing. I like it. But it's a tradition that we've created. One pastor friend of mine tells a story about how he was sitting on the front pew. He was a guest speaker, as I am this morning. He was doing some pulpit supply. And he sat there and he thought to himself, man, it's gotten quiet. Shouldn't somebody be doing something? And he realized that it was his time to get up and preach. He had been waiting for the special music, because there's always special music right before the preacher preaches. Forgot all about the tradition. I went to a church down in Dallas. My mother had been ill. I went down to check on her. While I was there, I thought, I'll go to a church. I've heard a lot about this church. It's a great church, Ed Young Jr. It's what we would refer to as a seeker-oriented church. And I showed up pretty much dressed like I am now. Because for me, when I go to work Monday through Friday, I dress like this, only I take the tie off. That's my nod to casual, business casual. It's what I'm comfortable in. It's the first job I had out of college. I had to wear a gray pinstripe suit, and I've gotten comfortable with it over the years. And I show up at this church, and I walk in, and everybody is wearing T-shirts, or Aloha shirts, slacks, jeans, chinos, very casual. And I'm cool with that. And they greet me. I'm clearly a visitor. And they start telling me, you don't have to, you can dress how you want. You can be comfortable and casual here. And there's a little part of me that's just sort of oppositional. And I thought to myself, they have created their own tradition. Their tradition is business casual, golf shirt and chinos. I'm going to play with this a little bit. So I looked at the young man who was greeting me. I said, you don't want me here because I'm in a suit? Am I not welcome if I have a tie on? He got a little flustered. We create our own traditions. We do it all the time. One of the things that I get from this story of Micah and the Danites and the priest is to be real careful with those traditions. There's nothing wrong with tradition. I love a little tradition, but I want to know that it's my tradition, not God's command. And as long as I'm clear on that, and I can be a little flexible when I have to be, then I think we're okay. But when we start creating these traditions and holding to them, especially if they go counter to what God says, there's no tradition, no matter how well established it is. If it's counter to what God says, it has no place in our lives. That's the warning for this morning. Now here's the good news. The good news is God gives us these warnings so we can stop and pause and examine and search and look and know that when we do things, we're doing it to the glory of God and not just because we've created something on our own. And that's the message I want to leave you with this morning. When you come in here to worship, when you bow your head over a meal at home, when you open your mouth to begin to share with someone what it means to be a Christian, make sure that it's all coming out of this book and not some tradition that's been created along the way. It'll save you a lot of trouble. And unlike Micah, and unlike the Danites, and unlike the priest, God really will bless you. In closing, let me just say this. I ask you to pay attention to the priest. Priest got a gig with Micah, household priest. And then he traded up for a bigger gig. And we look at that priest and we think, didn't he know better? And at the end of chapter 18, and I can't quote it, but it says basically this, Jonathan, the son of Gershom, was the priest. Jonathan, the son of Gershom, the son of Moses. Three generations from Moses, the man who walked with God, talked with God, had to hide his face with a veil because the holiness of God radiated out from Moses and people couldn't stand to look on it. Three generations we'd gone from Moses to Jonathan. Clearly, godliness is not a genetic trait. Godliness is not inherited. It's something that we do on our own. And Jonathan did not do that. He traded on his grandfather's name, perverted the system that God had set in place, and I think that the rest of the story will tell us that he did it to his own detriment. Let me encourage you to be of good faith. Examine your hearts. And when you do something, if you do it because that's the way we've always done it, power to you. Some of our traditions are good. Like I said, I like age-graded Sunday school. But it's just a tradition. And we need to make sure that we not confuse the two. Let's bow our heads and I'll pray.
You've been listening to a Plowman podcast. Find us on the web at theplowman.org. The Plowman features the preaching ministry of Rod Harris, pastor of Trinity Baptist Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma, located at the corner of 41st and Union. To learn more about the ministries at Trinity Baptist Church, visit us on the web at www.tbctulsa.org.